Right. Okay. So last time, basically, we started going over the Rambam's introduction to the Mishnah. Right. So continuing, basically, our pursuit to get some of the foundations of Torah Shebaal Peh, which is also the foundations of Talmud. Right. So for that purpose, so we looked at the beginning of the Rambam. So we read his description of how the mitzvos were originally given over. So he said there was basically, Moshe Rabbeinu gave it over four times, and then the four different groups of people that he gave it over to, each of those groups themselves would give it over. So we noticed that it's interesting, right? We're just noting the fact that from the very inception of the Masorah, so we have this idea of Lilmod ulamed. In other words, the two parts of Talmud Torah, in other words, to learn and to teach, are from its very inception was the way that it was given over. So that that was such something that we noted that was interesting. And we also noted that the Rambam, as always, is wants to focus in on the fact that there is Torah Shebichsav and there is Torah Shebaal Peh. So that was another feature of how all the mitzvot were given over. Even before there was the Chumash, which we have today, that the way that people would learn the Torah would be that there would always be a Torah Shebichsav element and a Torah Shebaal Peh. In other words, when they learn mitzvot, there are always these two components. It wasn't that, in other words, a person might think that, in other words, how did Moshe Rabbeinu originally would give everything over orally, and the people would just learn it by listening, and they could take, of course, they could always take notes, right, for themselves, but there was no Torah Shebichsav until Moshe Rabbeinu's dying day when he finally wrote down the Torah Shebichsav. But the Rambam is saying, no, there was always a Torah Shebichsav, even before there was Chumash, right? So in a sense, we have this, there are basically almost two ideas of Torah Shebichsav. There's one idea of Torah Shebichsav as that which is necessary to do Peirush, in other words, to learn to connect your Torah Shebaal Peh learning to. And there's also the final draft, so to speak, of Torah Shebichsav, which was written by Moshe Rabbeinu himself on his dying day, right? So, and the thing I think that we left off with last time was we just asked the question, what is the need for Torah Shebichsav, right? So I don't know if we gave what you could call the answer to that question, but we began to speculate that, why do we, because you could just have Torah Shebaal Peh, right? That's it. And learn everything from Torah Shebaal Peh. You could have mitzvah, say, this is this mitzvah, right? Today we're learning the mitzvah of living in the sukkah, and you could formulate, each Baal Masorah could formulate it how they want to, and then they teach the details of the mitzvah. So one thing we pointed out was certainly having it in writing forces you to, in other words, make sure you, it ensures the preservation of a system. In other words, that there are the roots of the system, and then there are the branches of the system. So the pasuk indicates the roots of the system, and then you have everything that branches off from that. So that was a feature, right, that we noticed. Interesting. I don't know if that's the essential reason for a Torah Shebichsav, but an interesting feature nonetheless. So we also noted that it seems that without Torah Shebichsav, and since we don't have, in other words, the Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh is ish mipish. In other words, it's from one person said to another person. So it's always in the voice of the chacham of that generation, which is a good thing. That's the nature of Torah Shebaal Peh. But in a sense, you lose the voice, so to speak, of the tzivoy itself. In other words, the idea of the command. In other words, the original command was the command of Hashem through the prophecy of Moshe. Right, so by having that in writing, we always preserve the voice, so to speak, of the prophecy. In other words, there's always it always goes back to the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, if you had Torah Shebaal Peh, of course you would say, well, it starts with Moshe Rabbeinu. That would sort of be in the back of your mind. But this way, it's always preserved in the learning itself. The command. In other words, the command is present. This is God's command. In other words, we read it. This is the actual sivui, the actual command of Hashem, and this is part of our learning. Whereas as opposed to that sort of in the back of our minds, like we know this originates, right? But as opposed to, in other words, it seems better that it should actually be present as opposed to saying it originates with that, right? It's the difference between saying that's the origin and that it's constantly present in one's learning. So it's constantly evident in one's learning that this goes back to the prophecy of Moshe. So I think that would take us to what I think is an even more essential reason for Torah Shebichtav, which is that we said that it's, in other words, we described it as, in other words, it's always, learning is always presented as a perush. In other words, as a commentary, so to speak. In other words, we're always explaining the prophecy of Moshe. So what does that say about our learning? It's saying that there's always going, that the learning always goes back to something authoritative. In other words, it always goes back, in other words, to the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's always preserved in the learning of the learning of Torah. In other words, right, so maybe you'll ask me some questions and we'll try to make it a little bit clearer. But I think that'll be the first formulation, right? So maybe we'll come back to... Absolutely. But those were our speculations about Torah Shebichtav. I have to formulate the last one a little bit better. But I have to think about it, how to say it better. Okay, so any questions on that?
That the Masorah is always one. That the Perush, what's trying to explain Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. That's what you're saying, right?
Right. It always goes back to that.
Right.
In other words, the system is fundamentally, it's authoritative in nature.
Right.
Right. In other words, this is not something that you formulate out of your own. Your own independent conception of things.
Right.
In other words, it's always a understanding of Moshe's prophecy.
Right.
In other words, and it's always, in other words, a perush, in other words, a commentary is always implying that there's an authoritative aspect to the subject.
Right.
In other words, if you don't have the Torah Shebichtav there, in other words, it loses the it's no longer evidence in your learning that you're learning a subject matter which is essentially authoritative in nature, right? In other words, the fundamentals of the subject are always go back to authority, right?
There's an understanding of what is the correct way to interpret that, what those statements are.
Mm-hmm.
By the authority, right?
That's right.
Right.
Right. Right, we could always come back to it, but basically it's to just want to at least begin the speculation. Maybe we have to cover some other things, and we could come back to it and make it clearer, right? So
before the Torah, there still is something that's
well. Torah refers to two things, really. In other words, even before we have the Chumash, other words, this book,
right,
that Moshe Rabbeinu finished on the last, on the last day of his life.
Right.
In other words, when I say he finished it, in other words, he only wrote it, in other words, based on what God told him to write. I don't mean to say that was like an original work, but in other words, that's Torah Shebichtav for us, right? But there's also an idea of Torah Shebichtav that learning, in other words, when you learn Torah, There must always be these two elements. In other words, there's that which we know that was written down,
right?
And that which is the oral explanation of the subject matter, right? So that was always a part of the system. In other words, even though the Chumash that we have today, in other words, the five books of the Torah, was not completed until Moshe Rabbeinu's dying day. Right. So, but the but even when, I mean, basically, even but even before then, in other words, even in the beginning of the 40 years,
right,
of their time out of Egypt. So, when Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah at Har Sinai, right? So, in other words, he might be told the mitzvah, or he'll be told a command, like he'll be told that you should dwell in Sukkoth for 7 days, right? You should dwell in Sukkoth for 7 days. So that was a command, right? So, how would he give this over to the people? So he would say to the people, he would say, you should dwell in, so he said, first of all, God told us you should dwell in Sukkos for 7 days.
Right.
That is the command, or that is the verse, so to speak. Right? All the people would listen and say, oh, this is the command.
Right.
But then, of course, there'll be questions. In other words, it's unclear. In other words, it's not when it's general. It's the command is stated in a very general way,
right.
And it's not clear. It's not ready to. It's not yet at a point of clarity to be able to know what to do practically, right? It's one thing to be, you're given a command. You're saying dwell in Sukkos for 7 days.
Right.
So of course you're gonna have some questions about that command. So, does that mean that everyone has to?
Right.
In other words, men, women, children, right? Does everybody have to?
Boys consider sukkah.
Right. So he says, well, only men have to, right? In other words, well, can it? What does a sukkah look like, right? What's its structure? Well, it has this many walls, it has these dimensions, it can't be higher than it can't be higher than this, it can't be lower than this, it has to have this much floor space, right? So there will be things that have to be clarified, but it's all a fulfillment of that command, of that you should dwell in Sukkos for 7 days, right?
Right.
So in the, the command part, in other words, the verse that was written down that became Tarsha Bechzav, and then there was the Tarsha Balpeh, and that was something that was passed on as a oral tradition from generation to generation, right, from one master of the tradition to the next.
And so that oral law is a thing which is basically the perush on the commands,
right,
explaining how to go about in fulfilling this statement about what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Right.
That's right. Right, and this for the Rambam is really we'll try to go more into it other times. Right, but this for the Rambam is really a fundamental point. If you don't have this point, it seems according to the Rambam, you don't have Torah. In other words, Torah has to, this has to be clear. Or if it's not clear, this idea that there's Torah Shebichsav and then there's Torah Shebal Peh, without that concept, you're going to be going nowhere. In other words, you won't be able to make heads or tails of the system, right? You won't know when you're. In other words, it's very important to have a clear conception of what are the mitzvos, what are the commands from the Torah Shebichsav, and then what are the explanations of that command. If that's not clear, then the loses its whole. In other words, then it's no longer a system. In other words, it loses that whole quality of being a system of chachma, which is basically a system which is goes back to the authority of Moshe. In other words, it's an understanding of that prophecy which Moshe Rabbeinu had, right? And that's it. In other words, and from its very inception, the system was given to Moshe Rabbeinu in such a way that people would be able to understand it, right? In other words, it was formulated so that people would be able to have a conception of what to do, right? They'd be able to have a conception of the mitzvos. That's the way the system was set up. It wasn't set up as a system that, as a private thing. In other words, that simply Moshe Rabbeinu is given commands, and then Moshe Rabbeinu has to figure out, and then Moshe Rabbeinu does what he does, right? But the system was a system which was for an entire nation, right? And that's the way the system was set up, so that the nation could be able to follow it. In other words, because Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't need to have this two-part system, right? In other words, this was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu for the people, right? It was a system. In other words, it's basically a system of laws for a community, right? This is which is really an interesting shift. In other words, previously the Nevi'im, in other words, before this time, the Nevi'im would have their command, and it wasn't set up in such a way that it would be, you know, from its very inception, to be a system that people could be able to keep, right, and that they'd be able to follow in a whole system of the oral law and the written law, right? But this was the nature of the mitzvot that Moshe Rabbeinu received. Right? In other words, it was given to him in a way such that it could be communicated to the people, and that it could be a system that they could keep and would be an organizing principle of their lives. Right? So it was
the why, so to speak. Like we have the command, and then we have the what. We have the how do you do, or the how, or the how do you go about this thing? What is this thing? But ultimately, isn't perfection? It's ultimately about the why. That, I mean, in the sense of what is
the purpose?
The purpose, exactly.
Right.
So, as far as the parish, does that go into also like the why? Like why? Like not only how do I do this, but why do I do this? Insofar as it, like, because ultimately it's perfection, and it's true that in order to get there, you need to know how to do what. But it's like it seems like ultimately it's philosophical. Like, you know, why do I do this?
Uh-huh.
So to speak.
In other words, is that part of Torah Shabbat
right,
Peh?
Exactly.
In other words, is that part of the traditions given from Moshe Rabbeinu?
Right, and because that seems like that would be that's really where everyone ultimately is striving for, like understanding what the why, like what the reason why I'm doing this, not just how to do it, but how is this refining me? Is it like how is this making more of a human being?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to speak. So like, is that also part of?
Where is the purpose of the system included? In other words, when we talk about the oral law, so we say that it gives us the knowledge necessary to be able to practice the system.
Right.
So does that include the purpose of the system?
Right, exactly.
So it would seem that it would have to include that.
Right.
And see, because if it didn't include that, then it seems you wouldn't be able to practice it. In other words, how can you practice the system? In other words, how can you do anything if you don't have a purpose for your action? In other words, then your action would simply just be meaningless movements of a body, right? So if purpose is not included in the system, then where's the system? In other words, then what are you doing, right? In other words, it seems that that would have to be. That would have to be part of the system, and you do see that when the Rambam in his presentation of Torah Shebaal Peh, right? So he includes ideas of purpose of the mitzvos. He doesn't leave that absent. You could say, well, what is he putting that for? In other words, that doesn't belong in a book on the law, right? It seems it's essential. In other words, there can't be a keeping of the law if there's no purpose to it, because then what are you doing? In other words, you're not keeping. In other words, if you're not keeping it for the purpose for which God gave the Torah, so then what exactly are you doing? I mean, I don't mean to say that therefore one has the ultimate understanding of the. In other words, that in order for to have the Torah, therefore you must have the ultimate understanding of purpose. But there must be some sense of purpose in the system. Without that, in other words, without a communication of purpose, then I don't see how there could be mitzvahs, right?
Right. Like that's what I was saying as you were saying it, like an example of sukkah.
Mm-hmm.
Like let's say someone, because theoretically someone could.
Right. It seems that it's an essential part of command, the idea of purpose, right? Of course. I mean, there's practical considerations. There's an idea. Mitzvahs don't require kavanah. In other words, we don't have to. Sometimes we don't even have to realize you're doing a mitzvah to be able
right.
to do a mitzvah.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that in the learning that shouldn't be part of the system of the oral law. In other words, it's one thing to say. In other words, that's a practical consideration. did you fulfill your requirement to do this mitzvah? But in the understanding of mitzvahs, which is what the Torah Shebaal Peh is about, in other words, it's a question of understanding. So the so if you don't have any sense of purpose in what you're doing, or in the or in what the when what in other words, in terms of what the purpose of the mitzvah is, so then it seems that there's a lack in your understanding of the mitzvah, or in the goal of Torah Shebaal Peh is to understand the mitzvah. Or in other words, there's another consideration when you're practicing the mitzvah, that you're not involved in Talmud Torah at that moment. You pick up the lulav, so you fulfilled your commandment of lulav. But when you're learning about the mitzvah of lulav, if you don't have any sense of that these mitzvahs have purpose to them, so that it doesn't mean you always have to arrive at the precise purpose, and it doesn't mean that you have to know what every single detail of the mitzvah, the purpose for that detail is. Right, or certain things, like the Rambam says, in other words, we can't determine a cause for. In other words, should it be 10 tefachim or 11 tefachim? Right, should it be this big or should it be that? In other words, certain things you won't be able to arrive at purpose. But in terms of an overarching purpose, in other words, if there's no sense of that, then what are you learning? Right.
Right.
In other words, then it makes. The mitzvahs of Hashem makes them meaningless, right? It just makes them into rote, meaningless actions,
right?
So that's it's impossible that that could be the system,
right?
Right? And I think the Rambam is the clearest proof to that, because he always in other words, there are many places where he'll go into the purpose of the purpose of the mitzvahs. Right, in the Mishneh Torah, in the Yad, in the book that's basically a purely halachic work, right? I mean, I could just say cite one example in the fourth chapter in the laws of the foundations of the Torah. So after the Rambam presents the we call it Maisa Bereishis and Maisa Merkava, in other words the most advanced ideas of the physics and metaphysics. So he says. So basically, asks the question. So if, in other words, if this is such a great pursuit and study, so in other words, why not just do that? And why not just involve oneself in that study? So it says, but the so person has to involve themselves in the study of the halacha and the study of the mitzvos. And he gives a reason why one should learn the mitzvos, right? And he says because this is the great good which God has given us to settle the mind of man and to enable him to inherit the how does he say it? Well, let me just quote from the actual Rambam. Make sure we get it right. Yeah, so I'll read it inside. So he says. So the Rambam says the need to first involve oneself in the study of halacha. So he says, in other words, and he calls the study of those great areas like the journey in the orchard, right, or the garden, the pardes. So he said, that one should not journey in the orchard in the garden. Until one's stomach is filled with bread and meat. He says, and bread and meat, this is to know what is forbidden and what is permissible and the like from other mitzvos. He says, even though these things are a small matter, in other words, this is something the Chachamim, the wise men called a small matter, because they said, Davar gadol maisa merkava v'davar katan havayos debai v'rava. So they said the great matter, that's Maisa Merkava, right? The study of the vision of the chariot. And small matter, though, that's the debates of Abaye and Rava. In other words, the Talmudic debates, dialectics to understand the halachic system. So Afal Pikein, even so, so you should still do those first. Because they settle the mind of a person first. And furthermore, They are the great good that God had bestowed to settle this world in order to inherit the world to come. And it's possible for everyone to know them, small and great, woman and man and woman, one of broad heart and one of narrow. Okay, so the Rambam, I think that's one example. I think it's a very startling example of where the Rambam is pointing to the purpose of the entire system of mitzvahs. Right? So, and it seems that this is fundamental. In other words, if you don't have that, I mean, it's not enough to just know that the mitzvah. In other words, of course, one should know the mitzvahs. This is the will of God, and therefore one should strive to keep the will of God, right? But then there's God's will is for some good, right? So there is an importance to studying what that good is. In other words, what precisely is the good that God has bestowed us with? Because clearly the Rambam finds it important to take that up, right? So it seems that is a must. Of course, one can't, you know, if one starts confusing philosophy with halacha, you know, that's a problem too, right? In other words, if you get too philosophical while you're learning halacha, sometimes you have to study the what. In other words, you have to establish clearly the ideas that are being expressed, right? But if there's never a involvement in the understanding of purpose, and many times as well, even to understand some of the many of the issues of halacha. In other words, to understand many of the principles which the halacha rests upon, if one doesn't have any sense of purpose, one will have no sense, one won't even be able to make heads or tails of the halacha itself. Right? Very often that's what illuminates and makes clear why you'll understand the what of the halacha itself. Right? There's at times you don't know what to do if you don't have a sense of purpose. In other words, what should I do in this case, right? So very, very often, sometimes you have to bring it in that realm. Right? It's certainly fundamental. All right, so let's move on a little bit in the Hakdama here. Okay, so we're up to, so he gave his example about the sukkah. Right, so he says, "Vayhi b'sofar b'yim shana." So you see that? Right, your text is a little different than mine. Mine is the Shelas edition. Yours is the Kafach. Right, so some of the words will be different, but I'll translate. All right, so "Vayhi b'sofar b'yim shana." So it was the end of the 40 years. In other words, the 40 years that the Jews were in the desert. Perosh Chodesh Shvat, the beginning of the month of Shvat. Hikilam alav shalom v'amar lahem. So Moshe gathered them together, and he said to them, "Hinei karav zman mosi, v'lachein mi shama mani shmua v'shcheicha." So the day of my death is approaching, and therefore anybody who's heard something from me and forgot, yavov yishal v'avar enulo u'mish nistab kolo sheila yavov v'avar enulo. So right, so if you have, right, if then just come ask me, I'll explain it. Or if you're unsure about a certain question, then I'll come and I'll explain it. Omar Akasuv Ho Moshe Beres Hatorah Azos Leimor. So the Torah says in the book of Sefer Devarim, so Moshe began to explain this Torah, saying, "Sifrei." So this is what the rabbis say in the Sifrei. So Kol Shech Shachach Halacha Achas Yavav Yishna V'Chol Sheyishlo Farish Yavav Yifarish. Right. So in other words, what did Moshe Rabbeinu mean when he said that? Anybody forgot Halacha, I'll come and I'll repeat it. Anybody who it needs a perush, an explanation, I'll come and explain it. V'imsu mepiv ha-shmuos v'lamdu ha-perushim v'meshech oso ha-zman sh'mirosh chodesh shvat ad shiv ba'adar. So the whole time they were involved in that till the 7th of Adar. V'kasher haya lefnei Mosa nigash l'chziva. And when it was before his death, he began writing. V'chasav shlosha asar sefer Torah gevilim. So he wrote 13 sefer Torah. 13 Torahs, kulam, mi beis bereishis ad lamed Yisrael, from the base of the word bereishis, the first word of the Torah, to the lamed of the word Yisrael, the last word of the Torah. Benasan sefer l'chol shevet l'lachas bedrachav, and he gave one sefer, one book to every tribe to follow it. In other words, to follow the ways of that Torah. Vashlosha asar nisanu l'levim, and the 13th he gave to the Levim. V'amar lahem, he said to them, l'kocha sefer ha-Torah, take this book of the Torah. Then he went up to the mountain in the middle of the seventh day of Adar. Sorry, I'll put the comma before. So according to what the tradition worked out, in other words, that's when he died. This was his death for us. Because we don't have him anymore. A life for him. To what he was going to. This was death only in relationship to us, because we didn't have him anymore. Because we lacked him. And life for him, l'masha alai lav, to what he was going to. So it was life for him. This is what they say. Moshe Rabbeinu never died. Ela alo mashamish b'marom. Rather, he went up and he served on high. V'adibar al ze aroch ma'od ma'od v'ein ze makomo. The discussion of this is very lengthy, and this is not the place. Okay? So he says it's not the place. But yet he felt it was important to at least say that. Right? That, in the Torah there's a different conception of life and death. Right? So we think of life in terms of the breath and that the body is carrying on life functions. Right? But the Torah's idea of life is a different idea. Right, the Torah's idea of life is, are we living in line with our nature? In other words, are we truly existing? In other words, so Moshe Rabbeinu, he was fundamentally not existing. In other words, it wasn't death for him. In other words, we have death because part of our energies are going to our bodies. In other words, what is not our essence? Right, for Moshe Rabbeinu, all his energies were going towards his fundamental nature, towards the knowledge of God. In other words, so in a sense, the loss of his body was not death for him. In other words, because there was no loss, right? Because that was not something that he was involved in. There was no break in his body, right? Whereas for us, in other words, part of us dies. In other words, because part of us when we die. In a sense, it's not like when Moshe Rabbeinu died. In other words, because our energies were not purely going towards the knowledge of God. And some of our energies were going towards our physical existence. So in a sense, when our physical body dies, so part of us dies, right? For Moshe Rabbeinu, it was just a progression from it was just a street progression. There was it was not death for him, right? But obviously there must be a lot more to the subject matter. The Rambam says the discussion of this is exceedingly lengthy, and this is not its place. So, but it would be an interesting thing. In other words, so why is put it here, right? Yeah. But he does say it's not its place. So. Left in a quandary.
When he physically died, it's really that he is not, it's not as if any part of him is dying, because how can something of yours die if there's nothing there?
Right. In other words, he wasn't investing any energy into that area. So in a sense, that there was no part of him which died. In other words, but if we divest energy to that area,
right,
and then that part of us dies,
right,
so part of us has died.
Right.
Right, so it wasn't just a direct progression from from this existence to the next.
Right.
For Moshe Rabbeinu, it was a smooth, it's sort of speaking in metaphors, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it was a smooth progression from one to the next. Right.
Right.
There was no energies lost. I mean, energy is a metaphor, but just sort of to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, television. You know, we're not talking about an electronic device,
mm-hmm.
Right? So, but it's a useful metaval.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's go on. Chasher meisal v'shalom v'hu kvar ma. Right. These are all very important things, but we have to know what we want our focus to be. The chasher meisal v'shalom v'hu kvar maser li Yeshua mashnita lo min haperish es bonin bo Yeshua v'anshei doro. So when Moshe died, so he gave it over to Yehoshua, or before he died. So Yeshua and the people of his generation involved themselves in the contemplation of this, in its contemplation. The Chol Mash Kibel Memenu Hu Oachad Zekeinim Ein Bo Din Dvarim V'Lu Nachla Bo Machlokas. So in everything that they received, there was no debate about it, and there was no machlokas. U'mashaloshama bo dvar min ha'navi alav shalom. And some, let's say, an area that he didn't hear from Moshe. In other words, obviously he's opening the possibility that it's impossible to have heard every single issue from Moshe Rabbeinu, right? In other words, there might be an issue that you didn't hear from him. Min ha'anafim, in other words, from the details. In other words, it's possible that in certain details, we might not have heard, had a direct tradition from Moshe, or the details of the Torah. In other words, what do we do in this specific case? In other words, that we can't see how it would emerge from the rules that we already know, right? So in that case, Hotzi Hadin Bo Behekesh. So they would work out they would figure out what the halacha was using one of the rules of derivation. Using one of the 13 rules that were given on Sinai. In other words, there was a method of derivation that was given over to be able to learn new halachos out from the... In other words, of course, this brings out another importance of Torah Shebichsav. In other words, from the written Torah, in other words, but that's really part of the... In other words, this really joins the fact that this is a authoritative system. In other words, we always have the presence of the authority. In other words, we could always go back to that part of the system, in other words, to the Torah Shebichsav, and be able to be able to work out what the halacha would be, right? Using one of those 13 rules.
There was no machlokas except for a not there was no machlokas, and there's just a perhaps a lack of understanding of the details.
Right. Well, he's saying there's those two areas. There's
right.
The area that was a tradition was directly heard from Moshe.
Right.
So there can be no machlokas, right? There can be no machlokas in that area.
Right.
The Rambam comes back to this point later on, but this is a fundamental point. There was no machlokas.
Right.
Then there's another area. Areas where there was no direct tradition, and that could be, which could be learned out using one of these 13 rules, right? So then the Rambam goes on, so it might be clarified from what he says next.
Yeah.
And so those halachos that they would learn out, so dvarim shelo naflo behem machlokas, elahayis aleihem haskama. In other words, so there are things that were totally agreed upon. But there are also mashe naflo b'machlokas, bein shtei svaros. Sometimes there would be two theories. In other words, since it's, right? In other words, there would be two theories as to what the halacha is, how to learn it out. V'hikish zeh hekesh v'nis chazik etzlo, v'hikish zeh hekesh v'nis chazik etzlo. And each one would work it out differently, what the halacha would be. Because these dialectical rules, so methods, so this can happen. V'chasher eira zos hamachlokas halach achar arov. And when there would be a debate like this, they would go after the majority. In other words, they could have a vote. In other words, they could get together in the court of 71, and they could vote. And then, because it says Achari Rabim Hatas, you go after the majority. So there was always a way to work it out. So in practicality, there was never any argument, right? So there could be argument, but there was a way to work it out.
As far as practically, what do I do now? Like,
right, there was always a practical final consideration.
Mm-hmm.
The only time we run into trouble is once there was no longer a Sanhedrin. In other words, when there's no longer a Sanhedrin, when there's no longer that highest court,
right.
So then there you don't have the ability to take a vote.
Right.
So there the Rambam discusses what do you do in such a circumstance. So basically he says, if you don't know where the halacha lies, in other words, if you don't know who's correct, in other words, because you could have many different courts now. In other words, you could have this court over here, you have this court over there, they each say something different.
Right.
No Sanhedrin, they can't come to a vote.
Right.
So so what do you do? So if you don't know what, in other words, so it sounds like he's saying that if you have the ability to discern, in other words, if you can make a decision, in other words, theoretically you could say one way or the other,
right.
But if you can't, so then if it's a law from the Torah, So then you have to go the stringent. In other words, the more stringent ruling, that's how you have to go. And if it's a ruling on a rule of the rabbis, on a law of the rabbis, so then you go to the lenient opinion, right? So there's a way to work it out, even if you don't have a Sanhedrin. Of course, with the Sanhedrin, it's a much better situation because everyone is doing exactly the same thing. In other words, everybody is lined up in terms of what they do in terms of halacha. But that's where you have this idea that today you could have multiple opinions, but that's accidental. In other words, that's not the way the system is supposed to work. We're in waiting. We're waiting for the Sanhedrin to be reconvened, and then there could be one halacha for the entire Jewish people. Right. Then there can't be such debate.
So, Moshe's time. There was no machlokas in terms of what was the halacha. Like,
right.
There was no, but within the system, like within the Torah Shavu Chasav and Torah Shavu Peh, there still was conceptually different ways to learn it. Right. There must have been, because later on. Mm-hmm. People had different. Now they came up with different.
But that would only be in an area of a detail. In other words, because all the fundamentals that is agreed upon. There's never a. In other words, that we have a totally intact tradition on all the fundamentals. The Rambam goes later on and gives examples of the fundamentals, right? But all the fundamentals, there is no debate because that we have a clear tradition on. Right, so the only area where there's ever question,
right.
In other words, that's the area that those the area of the Rambam calls the branches, right? In other words, details. In other words, it's I'm not going to give an example, but in other words, it's enough to say for now. In other words, in the system of the Torah, there are things that are the fundamentals, because the Rambam himself is going to talk about this later, so I don't want to give an example now.
Yeah.
Right, but there are things which are fundamentals. And then there are things that are the branches of the system. In other words, then it makes sense. In other words, how could there be, if there's debate over the fundamentals, then how could you have a system?
Right.
Right? In other words, if you have debate about the most basic things, if one person holds that, there's a completely different conception about what a sukkah is. Right? I mean, that's, you're going to run into problems. Or if somebody holds that when it says an eye for an eye, it literally means that you take out the other guy's eye.
Right.
You can't have a Torah then,
right?
Right. So those things are totally right. There's no, there's never a debate, and the only place where you could have debate is that's when you have in the area of details,
right.
And there, even there, there's a system. In other words, it seems that you could have two possibilities. They could all agree, they could all see the same idea. I think the Rambam seems to suggest later that if they're all on the same intellectual level, they all will come out with the same idea. Right, suggest that later. I guess it could be different understanding of what the Rambam is talking about there, but then there could be a debate, right? But then they take a vote, right? It's the system is worked out, right? So that's the right. I mean, the Rambam sort of trying to break the system into its parts, right? So we could sort of have a little bit of a deeper understanding of what the nature of the system is. But you shouldn't think that. In other words, because then if you don't have this understanding, then you'll think like in the Gemara, if there's a machlokas, so then you'll say, well, what did they do in the time of Moshe?
Exactly. No, that's
right.
From an outsider's perspective, you see all these arguments between sages, between rabbis about about which way to go. So you think like. Well, like so
right. Every page, it's only debate.
No, exactly.
Right.
Like really, basically, right. Exactly. Like. The whole system itself was set up such that there was never anything to begin with that was like...
Right, but if you think about it, there's nothing wrong with saying... Even if the majority of halachos are all debated, but still, in other words, there's a difference between the halachos which are the fundamental of the... In other words, the fundamental idea of the system,
right.
And then the details,
right?
It's only in the area of the details where there's ever such debate,
mm-hmm.
because there was no tradition on that point.
Right.
And you'll see in the Gemara, if there's ever a tradition, if someone says, I receive this as a tradition from my teacher, the debate stops immediately. Even if they had a great argument, the debate stops right there. Right? No more debate. There can't be. In other words, because how can you argue? In other words, because it's a system of, it's an authoritative system. Right? It only goes into the realm of debate and theory when we don't have a tradition on that point, right? So the right, so that's fundamental when you're coming into the Gemara to realize that every area that there's a debate in, it means it's not a fundamental. So where are the fundamentals? So where are the fundamentals presented? So the fundamentals are sometimes right in front of you, and you don't even realize it because you just go right. People just run right to the machlokas. In other words, it requires a different. In other words, you have to have a different approach. You have to have a different sort of eye when you're learning to see the area. In other words, what does everyone agree upon? In other words, you'll see there's always something that everyone agrees upon. And that's where the debate begins. If they didn't agree upon at least something, then there couldn't be a debate, right? Then it'd just be totally wouldn't even be meeting issue, right? So, like everybody agrees that there that Kriya Shema is said once at night and once during the day. So, when exactly does the night begin, and how much of the night? Well, when exactly does the day begin, and exactly how much of the day? So in those areas there could be debate, but everybody agrees. Right, everybody agrees night, day, right? But all right, so you have details, right? So one says that it's 5 minutes, right? In other words, those are clearly that's clearly a detail. I think that's a clear example of what a detail. You know, you only have to look in the first couple pages of the Talmud, right? And there's a very clear example of everybody agrees there's such a thing as Kriya Shema, mm-hmm. right? So some might say you only have to say this much, right? Only have to say this pasuk, or some say you have to say two, right? So everybody agrees you have to say Kriya Shema, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody says you don't have to say Kriya Shema. Exactly what? How many psukim? You know, there'll be slight there'll be debates, right? But only in the area of details. And also, the debates really only... And the Rambam talks about when the debates actually begin. In other words, because originally, if there was any debate, that would be something that would be decided in the Sanhedrin. So also, you have to realize in the Talmud, when you have so many debates, that's because we're talking about a time where there was no Sanhedrin. Right? Of course, they develop... In other words, they worked out a... rules for how to determine what the halacha is based on the Gemara, but it's different than how the Sanhedrin functioned, right? Because sometimes you could actually have a... Whereas by the Sanhedrin, if you had the majority hold one way, that's the way it goes. Whereas at times, in the Mishnah, the Rambam will talk about this later, mm-hmm. the time the Mishnah might report that there's the majority hold this way, and one guy holds this way, and we might actually practically go like that individual. In other words, even though the majority hold against him. Why? Because that guy had a better idea, right? Whereas now, in other words, there's a difference between when you have the Sanhedrin and after you have the Sanhedrin, right? So that's also fundamental. Whereas the Talmud is a compilation which is after the Sanhedrin was no longer functioning. So that's why, in other words, page after page of debate, but that had to be preserved. Right, in other words, that's the state we're in. I mean, you know, tomorrow, if the Sanhedrin was reconvened, they can make a decision on every single point, and that would be it. And they could formulate a new curriculum. In other words, they wouldn't have to use the Talmud as their curriculum for teaching Torah Sheba'al Peh. In other words, they could publish their own. They could publish a clear, and they wouldn't have to Also, they wouldn't necessarily have to publish anymore. Revert back to a system of just being total, pure Torah Sheba'al Peh, right? In other words, the idea that Torah Sheba'al Peh is written down itself is a development which occurred during the Gullus, during the exile. In other words, in order to save the Oral Torah, in order to maintain. In order to maintain the Oral Torah, right? Without doing that, things would have been lost.
So even though conceptually, you're saying, even though within the very details of them, and on the only arguments were on the so even at the time of Moshe, the only thing with the details, once again, just to clarify, with the details at the time of Moshe, were those were never argued, even the details as well, or those were possibly argued at the time?
Well, they could argue it, but they would argue it in the Sanhedrin. And they would make, and then
at the time, then they
would argue it, right. And then they would make a decision.
So within the time, so the system was set up such that there are different ideas. They're conceptually different things for the details. How you can learn out the details, obviously.
Right.
So within the system, the fundamentals are always, since there's no second conceptual way to learn it, but within the details, there are two ways to.
Right. Exactly.
To learn the thing.
Right. But it would also seem though that if they were equal in other words, if they were equal in their studies,
right.
Even there they wouldn't debate. In other words, if all the fundamentals were exactly as clear, in other words, if both parties were absolutely clear on the fundamentals and exactly in agreement on the in other words, the Rambam talks about it later. In other words, that how debate can arise. So he talks about that debate will arise, in other words, because they're not matched in terms of their understanding, right? In other words, if they both have a clear understanding of all the fundamentals, then they will agree even on that, right? In other words, those debates seem to increase, right? In other words, when their level of understanding is not on par. But of course, it seems even that. In other words, there's always a possibility of a debate, but there's a way to work it out. So, but of course, it's an interesting question. In other words, I have to look into maybe do a little bit more research on this question. But in other words, you have to ask. In other words, without a Sanhedrin, it seems we still have rules of how to establish the halacha from the Gemara. In other words, sometimes the Gemara will say the halacha goes this way.
Right.
So, but under whose authority? If there's no Sanhedrin, where's the authority coming from? Uh-huh. So it would seem that it's an authority. I'm just guessing here. I mean, I have to maybe ask somebody who knows more than me. But perhaps there the authority comes. It's a authority which comes. From agreement. In other words, everyone agreed everybody agreed that this individual was the wisest of that generation,
right.
Even if there might not have been a Sanhedrin. Or everyone agreed to follow the ruling of this court, even though it's not the Sanhedrin. Right? I think the Rambam in his introduction to the Mishneh Torah, so he says basically, I'll try to, you know, not read every line, but sort of summarize. But, so he says that, how does he say? So after the court of Rav Ashi, right? So who compiled the Gemara, and they completed in the days of his son. So the Jewish people were spread out, basically. So so it goes on and says, and then then each court which arose would make their own laws, right? They would establish. And then you would have to follow after that Beis Din, right? In other words, and one court can't make somebody from another town follow its ruling. In other words, each place would have their own courts, and they could determine what the halacha is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he says, and the Rambam goes on. He says, and this is only in the matter of decrees and ordinances and customs that were made after the Gemara was compiled. But all the things that are in the Gemara HaBavli, in the Babylonian Talmud, all the Jewish people are required to follow it. And you would force any city or any country to follow its customs that they kept in that the people of the Gemara kept, right? And follow their tikkunos. And then he gives the reason. And he doesn't say the reason is because they were a Sanhedrin, because we know factually that there was no Sanhedrin.
Right.
So why? Because all those things in the Gemara, all the Jewish people agreed to, right? And also, and it goes on, and those chachamim who made decree, who made their tikkunos or decrees, and made their hanhagos and their customs, or they worked out what a halacha was, and they taught that the law was this way. They were all of the Chachmei Yisrael, all of the wise people of Israel, Orubam, or the majority of them, the Hem Shashamu Akabalam Ikriya Torah Kulam, and they are the ones who heard the tradition of the fundamentals of the Torah, Dor Achar Dor on Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Shalom. Right, every generation all the way to Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so and then he goes on, but it seems that where is it gaining its authority? Because of the agreement. In other words, Haskama. In other words, there is agreement amongst everyone, not because they had the power of a Sanhedrin. In other words, because there's certain halachos. If a Sanhedrin makes a decision, no one can argue with them. And if they do, that's a special halacha called Zaken Mamre. In other words, a rebellious rabbi. In other words, that he can't. If the Sanhedrin makes a decision, even if he's very wise in his own right, he can't argue with it, right? So there is no such halacha once you don't have a Sanhedrin, right? But why we follow it? Because all of the Jewish people agreed to these decisions. So in other words, if there's a certain method, if there's a certain way that the Gemara says, the halacha, in other words, because there are certain rules, in other words, sometimes they actually just say outright, this is the halacha. But when they don't do that, in other words, they seem to have set out certain rules of how do you determine what the halacha is. So we have to follow that, right? In other words, but it seems to flow from that, not from the fact that there was a Sanhedrin or something like that, right? So, that seems to be what the Rambam is saying. I don't know enough to say with absolute certainty, but I think that makes sense. It seems to be that that's what the Rambam maintains, right? The next thing the Rambam talks about is Nevuah. And basically that Nevuah can have, in other words, after Moshe Rabbeinu, Nevuah can have absolutely no place in determining halacha. That's a fundamental. But that's really the fundamental. He goes into a very lengthy discussion about Nevuah itself, but I think that I might not go into all of that. But, it might be something that you want to do independently. Yeah. Right?
Right, it's true. It's true. It is fundamental to the learning of Talmud that if you don't know that they're talking about details,
right,
you're going to be totally lost in your learning.
Right.
I mean, you have to first have a mind of, okay, what are the fundamentals that they agree upon here in this subject matter?
Right,
okay, now it could talk about a debate,
right?
But really, there's only one book that you could really use to help you get that kind of bearing, and that's the Rambam, right? Because everybody else sort of organizes themselves to the page of the Gemara, so that you're going to be lost no matter what they do to help you out. I mean, they help you out, but in order to get that overall bearing, in other words, like the Ram, there's Torah Shebichsav and there's Torah Shebal Peh. We're talking about a mitzvah. Okay, what mitzvah are we talking about here? Oh, we're talking about Kriya Shema. You have to read the Shema. Okay, that's a mitzvah from the Torah. All right. How many, is it one mitzvah? Is it two mitzvah? Okay, it's one. There's one mitzvah to read twice. Okay, so it's one mitzvah. It's not right. You have to have that, otherwise it's like being thrown into the deep end of a pool, and you might sink and die, or you might be able to tread water and save your life. But it makes more sense to go into the shallow end and sort of find your bearings. All right. So slowly, have an instructor show you. Okay. You're the fundamental. Okay, you got this is how you breathe.
Right.
This is how you. So the same thing here, right? So this is how you breathe when you enter the sea of Talmud, right? So it's it's clearly fundamental. Right, that's very important, right?
Like, so
if you don't have if you don't have this framework, then your learning will be meaningless because you won't be understanding the mitzvos.
Can you plug it back in?
Right. In other words, if you don't understand mitzvos,
right,
then what are you doing?
Right.
Right? In other words, what is the Torah? It's mitzvos,
right?
Of course, you might be learning a derabanan, but that goes back to a mitzvah too, right? But if that's not happening, your learning becomes absolutely meaningless. Talmud is the most valuable pursuit that a person could be involved in. Studying the Talmud, nothing greater than that. But if you don't have any sense of what you're doing, in other words, you're talking about mitzvos. In other words, that you won't get just by reading the Talmud. I mean, that you need a teacher. You need the Rambam, right? I mean, that's good advertisement for the Rambam. So.